Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. LaFonza Butler, if the name isn't familiar to you, it will be come Wednesday. Butler will be sworn in as California's next senator. Late yesterday, Governor Newsom announced he will appoint Butler to Dianne Feinstein's Senate seat following her passing on Friday. Governor Newsom said previously that if the late Senator Feinstein could not finish out her term for whatever reason, he would fill her seat with an African-American woman who was not going to run in 2024. Newsom said he didn't want to tip the scales in the upcoming election by appointing someone who is running for the seat. So what do we know about LaFonza Butler, her connections to Newsom, to California, and will she eventually run for this seat? Alexi Kossoff is here. He covers Governor Newsom and state politics for Cal Matters and joins us with more on the politics of the appointment and why Butler will make history when she's sworn in. Good morning, Alexi.
Good morning, Vicky.
Busy weekend for you. So Dianne Feinstein passes away early Friday morning. By Sunday evening, Governor Newsom has his pick for filling the remainder of her term. Do we know how long this was in the works for?
I mean, certainly there was a lot of pressure on Newsom to move quickly after Feinstein died, both at a national level because Democrats hold a very narrow majority in the Senate and they need every vote they can get. So already national Democrats wanted Newsom to move quickly to give them that extra vote. But I think also there was a lot of pressure on Newsom probably internally. He took a long time to appoint Alex Padilla to Kamala Harris's seat after she was elected vice president. And it created nearly 2 months of this public pressure campaign. And when it was all over, a lot of people felt very left down. So by moving so quickly and doing this all within the span of 3 days, it was a decisive decision. And the focus can now turn to how LaFonza Butler will serve Californians in the Senate.
And we know, like in the minutes and the hours leading up to this, I mean, there's a lot of rumblings about who was on the governor's shortlist. Who could this appointment be? And now we know it's LaFonza Butler. Was that surprising to you as a journalist?
I think, you know, in some ways, yes, because she's not as prominent as some of the other names that were out there, mostly elected officials like Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass or Secretary of State Shirley Weber or San Francisco Mayor London Breed. The thing is that some of the most prominent Black women in politics in California all said they weren't interested in the position and tried to pressure Gavin Newsom to appoint Barbara Lee to the position, something that he had basically said he was not going to do because she's already running for Senate. So I think it really limited his options. And in retrospect, it makes a lot of sense he would go for LaFonza Butler. She's a trusted political ally of his for many years now, you know, through these connections he's had with the labor movement and also with, you know, this political consulting firm where she was a partner and where all of his political advisors work.
Can you explain what Emily's List is for those who are unfamiliar?
Yeah. So for the past about 2 years, LaFonza Butler has been president of Emily's List. It's a very prominent sort of fundraising and organizing arm. And it works to elect sort of women who are in favor of abortion rights and sort of get more Democratic women into office who will boost, you know, abortion rights and you know, make sure that that sort of remains, you know, a priority for the party.
Mm. And as we know, leading up to that historic Dobbs decision, I mean, the governor in California, I mean, they really drew this progressive line in the sand, making California, you know, I guess what they would call it, like a sanctuary state for those who want reproductive care and reproductive rights.
There's a lot about the choice of LaFonza Butler that is really going to resonate with the Democratic Party base. In addition to her work in with abortion rights, she's also openly lesbian woman. So that is creating another kind of history because she'll be the first openly LGBTQ person to serve California in the U.S. Senate. As she's also a Black woman, and she'll be only the third Black woman to ever serve in the U.S. Senate. So in a lot of ways, she's making history, and that could be, you know, a big deal for voters.
Mm. Logistically, though, she lives in Maryland. So how does this work for her in terms of not currently being a California resident? What kind of reaction are you hearing about this, given that, you know, she's appointed to the Senate in California?
Right. I mean, this caught some immediate response, particularly from Republicans who were just like, what, you couldn't find anybody in California who could fill this seat? You know, to be fair, she does have a long history in California. She was here for many years. you know, she served as a University of California regent. She worked in the labor movement here. But, you know, it is a little odd. And the what the governor's office said is that, you know, she remains a homeowner here. She had only moved to Maryland to work for Emily's List. And so she will re-register here before she's sworn in and essentially serve in the Senate as a California resident.
Leading up to this appointment, we knew that Governor Newsom had said that his intention was to pick an African-American woman to hold the spot while essentially the election played out over the next year. Congresswoman Barbara Lee took offense to this. She's currently running for the Senate for the ticket in 2024. Can you explain why the congresswoman took offense to this idea?
Yeah, what the congresswoman had said is that he was essentially pigeonholing a Black woman as a caretaker. And it was sort of insulting to her that he couldn't see a Black woman as being worthy of holding the seat fully on her own terms. And, you know, the governor denied that that was intent. His intent, he said, he was just trying to make sure he wasn't tipping the scales of the race when there is already three very prominent Democratic members of Congress who are running for the seat. The problem now is that he sort of has backtracked on that promise. His office said Sunday that they actually had put no preconditions on LaFonza Butler. She is free to run for a full term if she wants to, which would perhaps indicate that she will. And that sort of is putting his thumb on the scale in a different way. If she does end up running, he's given her a huge boost in a campaign. So I think that that answer is not necessarily going to satisfy supporters of Barbara Lee's who really wanted to see her in this role.
Yeah, especially that California's primary is now in March, which is 5 months from
right,
now.
Right, exactly. And ballots are going to go out in February. So it's really, you know, not that much time till we'll be voting.
Mm. So Barbara Lee is obviously one of three people who are running for Feinstein's seat. She's a congresswoman from Oakland. There's also Congressman Adam Schiff from Burbank, Congresswoman Katie Porter from Irvine, as you mentioned, all Democrats. Any word from their campaigns on this appointment?
Well, Barbara Lee did put out a statement and she congratulated LaFonza Butler, but that she also, you know, asserted, I am committed to this race. I'm the progressive choice and I'm going to run full steam ahead. So she's definitely out there trying to spin this in the best way she can. Haven't heard yet from Schiff or Porter, but I can't imagine that they would be too pleased if LaFonza Butler enters the race, because that just further complicates the math in what's already a very wide open and you know, undecided primary.
Yeah. And you mentioned that LaFonza Butler, although has ties to politics, it hasn't held an elected seat before. And so now she'll be appointed as a senator. What kind of public record does she have? Do you have any idea of how she may vote on critical issues?
I mean, she is a Democrat and always has been. As you mentioned, she comes out of the labor movement, but she's also worked with Airbnb and Uber and some various different business interests, particularly in the tech sector in the past. So, you know, she's kind of straddled both sides. And I would imagine you would see her voting the way a mainstream Democrat would, you know, allied with labor, but not necessarily as progressive as someone like Barbara Lee might be. She'll obviously be a solid vote for abortion rights, gay marriage, things like that, that are very important to the Democratic base.
You know, when talking about the work with Airbnb or Uber, I think that kind of illustrates that it's not like a one-note relationship with unions and labor.
Right. I mean, she came out of that labor movement, but has evolved in her political work in the years since. I think a lot of people who rise up to that level of power do, because those opportunities present themselves. In particular, she worked on, there was a proposition about 4 years ago on the California ballot that would have, you know, prevented Uber and Lyft from having to classify their workers as their drivers as employees. And she worked with Uber to try and broker a deal with organized labor on this. And a lot of people in the labor movement felt betrayed by her because they thought, oh, this is one of our own who came out of labor. And here she is basically trying to undermine a huge goal of ours. Mm. So I think that that relationship has frayed a little bit. You know, there's some in the labor movement who are still very close to her and some who look at her askance. If she ran in the race, it'd be very interesting to see how they'd react to her, because some unions have already endorsed other candidates and others may be wary of jumping in at all.
She also has experience in academia. What do you know about her term as a regent with the University of California?
It was, you know, a pretty brief time. She was appointed by Jerry Brown in 2018. I think it's an example of how long she has been, you know, a power player in California politics, that she's had this close relationship, not with just Gavin Newsom, but also Jerry Brown. And she served for a couple years, but she left in 2021 when she moved to Maryland to serve as the president of Emily's List. So I wouldn't say that was, you know, the most definitive chapter, perhaps, of her resume.
Mm. And this is Newsom's fourth high-profile appointment. You mentioned Alex Padilla, who he appointed in 2021, has since been elected. But he was an incumbent and reelected. But anyways, to fill a Senate seat left by Kamala Harris when she became vice president yes. at the White House. And then you have Assembly Member Shirley Weber, who became Secretary of State, replacing Padilla, and then Rob Bonta, of course, who is California's attorney general. So LaFonza Butler is the fourth high profile appointment. What message does this send?
Well, besides the fact that, you know, Gavin Newsom has been quite lucky to really reshape California politics, one of the things that he always seems to do is appoint people who are going to make some kind of history. He appointed Alex Padilla as California's first Latino senator. He appointed Shirley Weber as the first Black woman to serve as Secretary of State in California, and she is now the highest ranking Black woman in California. Rob Bonta was the first Filipino attorney general. I mean, he loves these kind of appointments that are going to make some kind of, you know, political history. And he's done it again with LaFonza Butler as the first openly LGBT person from California to serve in the Senate. So I think that's kind of the through line that you can see. But, you know, he also likes to keep it sort of in the political family. Three of those four people are represented by his same political consulting firm. So he definitely, you know, you can see who his political allies are, and he will boost them. He will make sure those relationships are, you know, tended to.
And this history-making appointment follows a history-making passing of the late Senator Dianne Feinstein, the longest woman to serve in the Senate, more than 30 years serving California. Her body was flown back to San Francisco this weekend. What do you know about plans for a funeral or memorial service?
That's right. Her body is back here in California. The San Francisco is actually going to put her body to lie in state in City Hall on Wednesday. And then there's going to be a public funeral memorial service on Thursday at City Hall. And that will be live streamed as well for those who can't attend but would like to watch that.
Hmm. What do you think the public will remember about her legacy? I mean, over 30 years is a long time. And I know that this year there was controversy and debate over whether the senator should step down due to health issues. But do you think that's going to stand the test of time, or what we remember about the late senator goes back to, you know, the early 90s, the year of the woman?
Right. I mean, I think the reactions I've seen are kind of split by age. Those who were there for her prime and really got to watch the impact that she made, whether that be, you know, carrying the assault weapons ban at, you know, in Congress, whether it be the torture report about, you know, what the CIA did in overseas facilities. I mean, these really sort of landmark actions that she took in the Senate certainly define her legacy for a lot of people. I think for younger people who didn't get to see her when she was at her peak, unfortunately, this sort of sad decline in public over the last couple of years is really defining her legacy. So it's kind of messy, and I think it's going to continue to play out, you know, in the years ahead as people try and process what she meant to the United States, which was very, very substantial ultimately.
Alexi, thank you.
Thank you.
Alexi Kossoff is with CalMatters and covers Governor Newsom and state politics. Up next, a conversation with our interim general manager about an audit that details years-long financial mismanagement at Cap Radio and what that means about the public radio station's future. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.